On the 1st of September 1939, at dawn, the Germans crossed into our territory. German Air Force and regular army unexpectedly invaded Polish territory without a declaration of hostilities. In the early morning, the German airplanes attacked a number of towns all over Poland. The German airmen have bombed Augustów, Nowitzbór, Ostrów Mazowiecki, Brodnica, Czew, Pusk, Zambrów, Radomsko, Toruń, Kutno, Tunel, Kraków, Krosno, Trzebinia, Gdynia, Jasło, Tomaszów Mazowiecki, Katowice, Grodno. Casualties have been reported among the civilian population. Near Kutno, the Germans have both machine-gunned and bombed an evacuation train. In Grodno, a Catholic church was damaged. At Biarapodlaska, a Greek Orthodox church was partly destroyed. Further bombings are taking place. In the region of Danzig, the German Air Force attacked Gdynia, bombing it heavily. The enemy losses consist of 16 airplanes which have been brought down today. Poland has lost 2 units. Simultaneously with air attacks, German troops have violated Polish territory, crossing the border in several places.
Reports spread by the English News Service Exchange Telegraph and by the broadcasting station of Posen, Poland, are being emphatically denied in Berlin. These reports asserted that German airplanes had dropped gas and incendiary bombs in the vicinity of Posen. For the sake of history, however, the fact must be nailed down that the numerous border incidents in Silesia and East Prussia, and especially the Polish bombardment of Beuthen, created a situation which made it incompatible with the honor of a great power to let that series of military transgressions go by unpunished. Germany's action is an act of defense. The German official news agency, Deutsches Nachrichtenbüro, has been empowered to make the following statement. In the wake of false political reports with a tendency to cause alarm, this is the first atrocity story in the military field. It should be pointed out most emphatically that the disseminators of such atrocity stories are taking upon themselves grave responsibility. In view of the Führer's statement before the Reichstag to the effect that the German Air Force received orders to attack military objectives only, provided that the opponent keeps to the same rule, this piece of atrocity reporting has become a dangerous game.
The British ambassador in Berlin has been instructed to tell the German government that this country will carry out its pledges without hesitation, unless assurances are given that all aggressive action against Poland has been stopped and all German troops withdrawn from Poland. If the German reply is unfavorable, the British ambassador will ask for his passport. This was announced by Mr. Chamberlain in the House of Commons this evening. Before it rose, the House passed a bill for a credit of £500 million for war purposes, and the government announced a new bill extending the military conscription age to cover all men between 18 and 41. In Paris, it is announced that the French ambassador in Berlin is to warn the German government tonight in terms which will be similar to those used by the British ambassador. A communique issued from the German headquarters this evening claims that during today's military operations in Silesia, Pomerania, and East Prussia, all the objectives of the first day were attained. The Polish General Staff states tonight that 3 attacks on the Polish lines at Westerplatte in Danzig Free State have been repelled, and that the Poles are still holding the position. An official communique issued in Warsaw describes German invasions of Poland at several points and the bombing of Polish towns by German planes. The communique adds that this aggression took place some hours after the Polish ambassador in Berlin had told the German government that Poland was favorably disposed towards the peace efforts being made by Britain. Poland accuses Germany of using an allegation of a Polish attack on Gliwice as a pretext for aggression, and says that nobody in the civilized world will doubt who is the aggressor. The German government has decreed that listening in to a foreign wireless station is punishable by penal servitude, and that persons passing on news broadcast by foreign stations may be sent to prison, and in serious cases, put to death. It is announced in Washington that Herr Hitler has sent a message to President Roosevelt saying he has left nothing untried to settle in a friendly manner the dispute between Germany and Poland. Herr Hitler repeats the German claim that the attitude of the Polish government nullified German acceptance at the last hour of an offer of mediation by Great Britain.
Mr. Chamberlain rose to make his statement in the House of Commons at 6:05. His first words were, "I do not propose to say any many words tonight. The time has come for action rather than speech. 18 months ago, I prayed that the responsibility might not fall upon me to ask this country to accept the awful arbitrament of war. I fear I may not be able to avoid that responsibility. But I would not wish for conditions clearer than they are today as to where my duty lies. We have not neglected any means of making it crystal clear to the German government that if they insisted on using force again in the manner in which they used it in the past, we were resolved to oppose them by force. Now that all the relevant documents are being made public, we shall stand at the bar of history knowing that the responsibility for this terrible catastrophe lies on the shoulders of one man. The German Chancellor has not hesitated to plunge the world into misery to serve his own senseless ambitions." This passage of Mr. Chamberlain's speech was loudly cheered by the House. I would like to thank the House for the forbearance they have shown on 2 recent occasions in not demanding from me information which they recognized I could not give while these negotiations were still in progress. I have now had all the correspondence with the German government put into the form of a white paper. I do not think it is necessary for me to refer in detail now to these documents, which are already past history. They make it perfectly clear that our object has been to try and bring about discussions about the Polish-German dispute between the 2 countries themselves on terms of equality, the settlement to be one which safeguarded the independence of Poland and secured its due observance by international guarantees. There is just one passage of a communication dated the 30th of August, which I would like to quote, because it shows how easily the final clash might have been avoided if there had been the least desire on the part of the German government to arrive at a peaceful settlement. In this document we said, "His Majesty's government fully recognize the need for speed in the initiation of discussions, and they share the apprehensions of the Chancellor arising from the proximity of 2 mobilized armies standing face to face. They would accordingly most strongly urge that both parties should undertake during negotiations that no aggressive military movement will take place. His Majesty's government feels confident that they can obtain such an undertaking from the Polish government if the German government would give similar assurances." That telegram brought an instantaneous reply from the Polish government dated the 31st of August, in which the Polish government said they were prepared on a reciprocal basis to give a guarantee in the event of negotiations taking place that Polish troops would not violate the frontier of the German Reich, providing a corresponding guarantee was given by the Germans. We never had any reply from the German government to that suggestion. We never had any reply from the German government to that suggestion, Mr. Chamberlain repeated, a suggestion which, if followed, might have saved the catastrophe which took place this morning. Mr. Chamberlain referred to the German broadcast last night and to the specific sentence that, In these circumstances, the Reich government considers its proposals rejected. The Prime Minister said, these proposals have never been communicated by Germany to Poland at all. On the 29th of August, Mr. Chamberlain went on, the German government said they would draw up proposals for a solution acceptable to themselves and would, if possible, place these at the disposal of the British government before the arrival of the Polish negotiator. Mr. Chamberlain went on, we were awaiting these proposals. Our ambassador, he said, urged Herr von Ribbentrop to invite the Polish ambassador to call so that Herr von Ribbentrop could hand him the proposals for communication to his government. Thereupon, in the most violent terms, Herr von Ribbentrop said that he would never ask their ambassador to visit him. He hinted that if the Polish ambassador asked for an interview, it might be different. In a sentence which was not clearly audible, the Prime Minister appeared to say that the position was, or seemed to be, that Germany claimed to treat Poland as in the wrong for not entering into negotiations with Germany about proposals which she, Poland, had never heard of. On Wednesday night, he continued, Herr von Ribbentrop produced a lengthy document and read it aloud in German at top speed. Naturally, our ambassador asked for a copy. The reply was that it was now too late, as the Polish representative had not arrived in Berlin by midnight. We never got a copy of those proposals. The first time we heard them was on the broadcast last night. Is it not clear that the German conception of negotiation was that at an almost instantaneous demand, the Polish plenipotentiary should go to Berlin, where others had been before him, and there receive a document of the demands to be accepted in their entirety. The proper course, in our view, was that these proposals should have been put before Poland, who should have never have been given, who should have been given time to consider them and say whether they infringed her vital interests, which Germany had assured us previously she intended to respect. Mr. Chamberlain said that the Polish ambassador saw Herr von Ribbentrop last night and told him Poland was willing to negotiate on an equal basis. The reply to that, he added, was that German troops crossed the Polish frontier this morning at dawn and are since reported to be bombing open towns. In these circumstances, there is only one course open to us. Loud cheers. His Majesty's ambassador in Berlin and the French ambassador have been instructed to give to the German government the following document. Early this morning, the German Chancellor issued a proclamation to the German army which indicated clearly that he was about to attack Poland. Information which has just reached His Majesty's government in the United Kingdom and the French government indicate that German troops have crossed the Polish frontier and attacks are proceeding. In these circumstances, it appears to His Majesty's government and the French government that by their action, the German government have created conditions, namely an aggressive act of force against Poland, threatening the independence of Poland, which call for the implementation by the governments of France and Britain of the undertaking given by them to Poland to come to her assistance. I am accordingly to inform Your Excellency, unless the German government are prepared to give His Majesty's government satisfactory assurances that the German government are to suspend all aggressive action against Poland and are prepared promptly to withdraw their forces from Polish territory, His Majesty's government will, without hesitation, fulfill their obligations. Mr. Chamberlain continued, if a reply to this last warning was unfavorable, and I do not suggest it is likely to be otherwise, His Majesty's ambassador was instructed to ask for his passports. In that case, we are ready. Yesterday, we took further steps towards the completion of defense preparations, and this morning, we ordered the complete mobilization of the whole of the Navy, Army, and Air Force. We have also taken a number of other measures, both at home and abroad, which the House will not expect me to specify in detail. Steps have also been taken to safeguard the position in regard to stocks and commodities of various kinds. The thoughts of many of us must at this moment inevitably be turned back to 1914, and a comparison of our position now and that which existed then. How do we stand this time? The answer is, all three services are ready, and the situation in all directions is far more favorable and reassuring than in 1914. Behind the fighting services, we have built up a vast organization of civil defense. And as regards our immediate manpower requirements, the Navy, Army, and Air Force are in the fortunate position of having almost as many men as they can conveniently handle at this moment. There are certain categories of services for which men are required for military and civil defense. These will be announced in detail through the press and the BBC. The main and most satisfactory thing to observe is that there is no need of an appeal in a general way for recruits such as was made by Lord Kitchener 25 years ago. So much for the immediate present. Now we must look to the future. It is essential in the face of the tremendous task which confronts us, more especially in view of our past experience, to organize our manpower this time upon as methodical, equitable, and economical a basis as possible. We therefore propose immediately to introduce legislation directed to that end. A bill will be laid before you which, for all practical purposes, will amount to an extension of the Military Training Act, and all fit men between the ages of 18 and 41 will be liable for military service. Steps will be taken to ensure manpower required for industry will not be taken away. Continuing, Mr. Chamberlain said, there is just one observation I would like to make. That is, to record my satisfaction, and the satisfaction of His Majesty's government, that throughout these last days of crisis, Signor Mussolini has also been doing his best for a solution. Sir Chamberlain ended his speech with these words. It only remains to set our teeth and enter upon this struggle, which we so earnestly endeavor to avoid, with a determination to see it through to the end. We shall enter it with a clear conscience and with the support of the Dominions and the British Empire, and the moral approval of the greater part of the world. We have no quarrel with the German people, except that they allowed themselves to be governed by a Nazi government. As long as that government pursues the method which it has so persistently followed during the last 2 years, there will be no peace in Europe. We should merely pass from one crisis to another and see one country attacked after another by methods which have now become familiar to us with their sickening technique. We are resolved, said Mr. Chamberlain amidst cheers, that these methods must come to an end. If, after the struggle, we can re-establish in the world the rules of good faith and the renunciation of force, then even the sacrifices entailed upon us will find their fullest justification. There were loud and prolonged cheers when Mr. Chamberlain sat down.
The Prime Minister was followed by Mr. Greenwood, Labour, who said that British Labour would use all its resources against aggression at whatever cost. Sir Archibald Sinclair, speaking for the opposition Liberals, said the Prime Minister had their wholehearted support and had spoken for the nation. In the House of Lords, the Foreign Secretary made a statement which closely followed the lines of Mr. Chamberlain's statement. Lord Halifax pointed out that it was clear the German government was not prepared to lay force aside. He added that the problem of Danzig and the corridor had been present for 20 years. When it suited Germany to be on good terms with Poland 5 years ago, the Danzig question faded out. And only during the last few months
had it been deliberately aggravated and inflamed. The Archbishop of Canterbury said that we were accepting a challenge which, if it was not met, might be vital to the future of civilization itself. Lord Snell said that he thought we could face this issue in the quiet confidence that wrong cannot, in the long run, triumph on the earth. Several important bills passed through all their stages in both Houses of Parliament this evening. These include the Consolidated Fund Appropriation Bill, the Currency Defense Bill, the Prize Bill, the Government of India Act Amendment Bill, the Courts Emergency Powers Bill, the Armed Forces Conditions of Service Bill, and the Import, Export, and Customs Powers Defense Bill. The Commons also passed a bill to continue and amend the Rent and Mortgage Interest Restrictions Act. They are still considering various other emergency measures. Here, briefly, is the background against which the Prime Minister was speaking. Early this morning, Herr Hitler broadcast a proclamation saying that Polish provocation had become intolerable, and that he would now meet force with force. This was immediately followed by a proclamation by Herr Forster saying that Danzig had returned to the Reich. By this time, German forces were on the move and had attacked the Polish frontiers, both from East Prussia and from Poland's western border. The German air arm also came into operation. The German Reichstag was then hastily summoned, and after a speech by Herr Hitler, unanimously approved the incorporation of Danzig in the Reich. About the same time, a statement was issued in London making it clear that both Great Britain and France would fulfill their obligations to Poland to the utmost. The Polish ambassador saw Lord Halifax and is understood to have told him that Poland was the object of direct aggression and therefore invoked the Anglo-Polish Treaty of Mutual Assistance. The British cabinet sat for nearly 2 hours. It was followed by a short meeting of the Privy Council, at which the King signed orders in council providing for general mobilization of the Army and Air Force. The mobilization of the Navy had already been announced. In the meantime, the French government had also ordered general mobilization and had declared a state of siege throughout France and Algeria. The French Chamber of Deputies has been summoned to meet tomorrow. It was announced in Rome today, after a meeting of the Italian Cabinet Council, that Italy will not take any initiative in military operations. Herr Hitler has sent a telegram to Signor Mussolini thanking him for Italian diplomatic and political help, but adding, "I am convinced that with German military force, I will be able to fulfill the mission destined for us. I think, then, that in these circumstances, I will not have need of military help from Italy." Now, here are fuller reports about the way the situation has developed since early this morning. The Berlin wireless station announced at 5:40 this morning that the Führer had issued a proclamation to the army. It said that Poland had refused the peaceful settlement of relations that Herr Hitler had desired and had appealed to arms. Germans in Poland were persecuted, and a series of violations of the frontier, intolerable to a great power, proved that Poland was no longer willing to respect the frontier of the Reich. "In order to put an end to this lunacy," said the Führer's proclamation, "I have no other choice than to meet force with force from now on." He added that the German army would fight the battle for the honor and vital rights of reborn Germany with hard determination. The official German wireless station next issued a warning to all ships in the Baltic, stating, "The entrance to the port of Gdynia is closed, and every ship entering or leaving risks the danger of being destroyed." Almost immediately afterwards came another announcement from the Berlin Wireless that Herr Forster, the Nazi leader in Danzig, had issued a proclamation. It read, "Men and women of Danzig, the hour for which we have longed for 20 years has come. Today, Danzig has returned to the Greater German Reich." Herr Forster then sent a telegram to Herr Hitler announcing the reunion of Danzig with the Reich from today. Here is a late message. "It is learnt in London tonight that the British ambassador in Berlin, Sir Neville Henderson, had an interview tonight with Herr von Ribbentrop, the German foreign minister." Herr Hitler then telegraphed to Herr Forster, accepting the proclamation of Danzig's union with Germany. He said that the law for the union was ratified, and appointed Herr Forster head of the civil administration of Danzig. Next came a meeting of the Reichstag, which was addressed by Herr Hitler. Herr Hitler repeated his arguments that Danzig and the corridor were German, and that the German minority had been tortured. Germany, on the other hand, had always kept her obligations to minorities, according to him. He went on, "It is a deliberate lie for anyone to suggest that we always try to bring about revisions under pressure. I have this time, once more, tried to pursue our demands through peaceful channels." Herr Hitler declared that the British government had not wanted to initiate negotiations themselves, but had said they wanted to bring the Poles to the conference table. He had therefore worked out the proposals made known last night, and nothing, he claimed, could have been more loyal and modest than they were. But he had sat waiting for 3 days without a Polish plenipotentiary arriving, and that was intolerable. "I have therefore now decided," he went on, "to speak to the Poles in the same terms as they have used to us for months past." Herr Hitler continued with references to other nations. He had solemnly assured the Western powers that he demanded and would demand nothing from them. He had offered Britain Germany's friendship. The frontier with France, he repeated, was permanent. Next came Italy. "We must above all thank Italy, who has supported us the whole time. But they will understand that I will not appeal to foreign help in this fateful hour. We will carry out this task ourselves." As for the German-Soviet pact, Herr Hitler claimed that this ensured that their forces would be used together and not against each other. Then he outlined his aims. First, to solve the question of Danzig and the corridor. And then, to ensure that relations between Poland and Germany would be so changed as to enable them to live together peacefully. "I am therefore determined," he said, "to fight until the Polish government is inclined to set up these relations, or until another government is prepared to do so. I wish to ensure that peace on the eastern frontier does not have a different appearance from that on the western frontier." He stated that he had told his Air Force to confine themselves to military objectives. And he went on to claim that last night, Poles were fighting on German territory, and since 5:45 this morning, Germany had been shooting back. "Every bomb will be answered with bombs," he added. "Whoever fights with poison gas will be fought with poison gas." Herr Hitler then told the Reichstag that if anything happened to him, his successor would be Field Marshal Goering, and after him, Herr Hess. If anything happened to Herr Hess, in turn, then a Senate would appoint a new leader. He concluded by moving a bill for the union of Danzig with the Reich, which was passed with acclamation.
Even this evening, the course of hostilities between Germany and Poland is still far from clear. The first German war communique, issued in Berlin about 6 o'clock, declared that the military operations in Silesia, Pomerania, and East Prussia have brought the expected preliminary successes. In Upper Silesia, it claimed that the German troops had reached the heights of Upper Katowice. In the corridor, it claimed that they were approaching the River Brahe. That is to say, that they are halfway across the corridor on an advance from the west. Of the attack from East Prussia, it says only that the German troops are fighting for the time being on Polish soil. As for the operations of the Air Force, the communique declares that it has bombed a large number of aerodromes, of which 13 are mentioned. It is claimed that the German Air Force has thus gained the upper hand. The German communique added that units of the German Navy had taken possession of some positions near the Bay of Danzig, and that the harbor of Gdynia has been bombed by the German Air Force. In Warsaw, on the other hand, it is announced that the Polish defenders repulsed the German troops attacking from East Prussia and from Slovakia. The offensive from East Prussia, according to this announcement, was directed against Mrava on the main Warsaw-Gdynia railway. The troops operating from Slovakia were said to be directed against Zakopane, the well-known winter sports resort. It is claimed that a German armored train was captured near Danzig territory. Other Polish claims are as follows. 7 German aircraft are said to have been brought down in raids, 3 at Krakow and 4 at Gdynia. Bombers trying to reach Warsaw were driven off. Polish sources also allege that German aircraft bombed a refugee train from Poznan near Kutno, causing heavy casualties. Earlier in the day, the President of Poland, President Mosiecki, broadcast a proclamation to the Polish nation in the following terms. Early this morning, Germany launched an attack on the Polish state. In this historic moment, I appeal to all our citizens with the deep conviction that the whole nation will rally round the supreme commander of the armed forces in defense of its freedom, independence, and honor, and that it will give a proper reply to the German aggressor as it has so often done in the past. Marshal Smigliritz has also issued a proclamation to the Polish army. In spite of all sacrifices, he says, the final victory will be with us and our allies. It was announced over the Polish radio tonight that there is sufficient food of all kinds in Poland and a surplus in eggs, because the export trade has ceased and the stocks are being used for home consumption. A complete blackout is being enforced in Berlin tonight and will continue until further notice. London, it also is now completely blacked out. Since darkness fell, there have been no street lamps. Motorists, with their lights dimmed, have been guided only by the white lines down the middle of the road and the white stripes that mark the edges of the pavement. Indoors, all lights are shaded and windows darkened with heavy curtains. Hundreds of barrage balloons float overhead. They were sent up this afternoon, and while the light lasted, one could see that the London sky was crowded with them. They are being flown at a much greater height than during the recent exercises. Meanwhile, the other defenses against air attack are all in readiness. All personnel connected with air raid precautions have been called up, and all members of the Auxiliary Fire Service. In Greater London, the members of rescue and demolition parties have been told to report at once to their assembly points. The Police War Reserve has also been called up.
From now on, no factory sirens or hooters may be sounded except for air raid warnings. The Minister of Transport has taken over control of all British railways, which are to be administered under an executive committee of 6 members. All over this country, army reservists have been reporting since last night. And at the recruiting offices, there has also been a large stream of volunteers throughout the day. Today, the great evacuation began from London and other big towns in Great Britain. 3 million people are affected, including children, their mothers, and blind people, and the evacuation will go on for several days. The first 400,000 children left London today in the care of 22,000 teachers and volunteer helpers. More than half of them were under 5 years of age, and many were accompanied by their mothers. Reports from every centre emphasise the smoothness with which the plans were carried through, and the cheerfulness and good discipline of the children. The bulk of the national transport during the next 4 days is reserved for the evacuation, and only skeleton services will remain for normal traffic. The removal of patients from the big London hospitals has also been going on. Many of them are being sent to the seaside. The London Provision Exchange has announced that, by order of the Food Defence Committee, today's prices of all food commodities have been fixed as standstill prices until further notice. The National Executive of the Labour Party today issued a manifesto supporting the decision of the British government to resist this latest effort of conquest by aggression on the part of Hitler. The manifesto declared, "A state has been reached in the development of Europe where war has been chosen by Herr Hitler as a deliberate instrument of national policy. It is impossible for Labour to acquiesce in claims supported or conquests achieved by this method. To do so would be an indefensible betrayal of its own vital faith. The British Labour movement, therefore, calls upon all its members to stand solidly behind it in its resistance to aggression. Until those who have been willing to resort to its use have been overthrown, it sees no prospect of an enduring peace. His Majesty the King went by car from Buckingham Palace this afternoon to give an audience to Mr. Chamberlain at No. 10 Downing Street, a thing that has never happened before. Mr. Chamberlain, it is understood, was anxious to tell the King about the latest developments, but His Majesty wished to save him the time which would be taken by driving to Buckingham Palace and back again. As the King left the palace, he was greeted with tremendous cheering from the crowd outside. Her Majesty the Queen spent nearly an hour at the headquarters of the Women's Volunteer Services in Westminster, and during a complete tour of the building, she spoke to many of the women working there. Mr. Cordell Hull, the United States Secretary of State, announced today that Great Britain and France had agreed to refrain from the bombing of civilian populations in response to an appeal sent this morning by President Roosevelt to Britain, France, Italy, Poland, and Germany. Great Britain, in accepting the President's message, said, "Deeply impressed by the humanitarian considerations to which the President's message referred, it was already the settled policy of His Majesty's government, should they become involved in hostilities, to refrain from such action and confine bombardment to strictly military objectives, upon the understanding that those same rules would be scrupulously observed by all their opponents." President Roosevelt requested an immediate reply to his appeal. He said that the ruthless bombing from the air of civilians in unfortified centers of population during hostilities in the past few years had profoundly shocked the conscience of humanity.
If resort was had to this sort of human barbarism during the period of tragic conflagration now confronting the world, said President Roosevelt in his appeal, hundreds of thousands of innocent human beings would lose their lives. The president said he had addressed the appeal to every government who might be involved in hostilities. President Roosevelt was asked at a press conference today whether he believed the United States could keep out of a European war. He replied, "I not only sincerely hope so, but I believe we can, and that every effort will be made by the administration to do so." President Roosevelt also stated today that developments abroad would have an important bearing on what he would do about invoking the Neutrality Act and summoning Congress. Mr. Roosevelt announced that the United States ambassador to Germany, Mr. Hugh Wilson, resigned this morning. Mr. Wilson has been in the United States for several months. The Canadian Prime Minister, Mr. Mackenzie King, announced today that Canada's military, naval, and air forces have been placed on an active service footing. Mr. Mackenzie King said that Parliament would be asked to authorize the government to give Great Britain the most effective cooperation. The Canadian War Measures Act of 1914 has been proclaimed by order in council. This act gives the government wide measures of control over shipping, censorship, trade, commerce, the expropriation of private property, transport, etc., pending the Assembly of Parliament. The acting Prime Minister of New Zealand, Mr. Fraser, announced today that the Governor-General had proclaimed a state of emergency in the Dominion. Regulations have been issued in New Zealand about the three armed services, control of shipping, censorship and publicity, and the stabilization of prices. The New Zealand Finance Minister said today that to defend New Zealand or the Pacific only, and not to defend Britain, would mean the sacrifice of New Zealand and the Pacific. In Australia, Mr. R.G. Casey, the Minister of Supply and Development, announced today that munition factories are ready for instant and full production. The federal ministers who are absent from Melbourne are returning tomorrow by air. Mr. W.M. Hughes, the Australian Attorney General, has stated, "I have no doubt that the Australian people will meet the situation in a fighting spirit. They have been heartened and inspired by the manner in which the British people are standing up to their difficulties." The Viceroy of India has received assurances of loyalty and offers of their resources from 18 more Indian princes. At least 28 Indian rulers have now offered their services to the King Emperor. The Burma Senate today passed a resolution approving Britain's policy. The rulers of the Malay states, the Chinese and Indian communities in Malaya, and the communities of Kenya are among those who have sent expressions of their loyal support. The ERA Army Reserve is to be called up on permanent service. In addition, all Army officers and men on leave have been ordered to report at once to their units. An official statement says that the government decided today to summon both the Dáil and the Senate to meet at 3 o'clock tomorrow. The Parliament of Northern Ireland has been summoned to meet on Monday, when emergency legislation will be passed. This was decided at a cabinet meeting in Belfast today. Lord Craigavon, the Prime Minister, said today, "We are firm in our determination to do everything in support of the position which the British government have taken up." The British and Australian governments have imposed a censorship on postal correspondence. It is stated in London that, in general, our correspondence with the rest of the empire will not be affected by the censorship. It is announced in London
that all war risk rates, outward or homeward, outside the war risk cargo pool, will be increased by 50% on the present schedule of homeward rates for vessels sailing on and after tomorrow. This increase applies to all additional premiums. The Swiss government have ordered general mobilization for tomorrow. The Danish government has decided that during the present state of war between Germany and Poland, Denmark will observe complete neutrality. The price of gold in London today is 160 shillings an ounce. Little business was done on the foreign exchange market, which closed at 4 p.m. The sterling dollar rate is 4.18. Business on the commodity markets was almost at a standstill. The stock exchange is closed, and settlement was suspended yesterday until further notice. Lloyd's will close tomorrow. The Paris Bourse closed very dull, with business at a standstill. The Danish National Bank announces that the Danish kroner is to be fixed to the pound sterling at the rate which has been in operation up till now, that 22.40 to the pound sterling.
This is London calling. Before I read the news, here is an announcement. Until further notice, our shortwave news bulletins from London, in English and foreign languages, are available for rebroadcasting from any station in all countries of the world, except in certain empire countries to which notification to the contrary has been sent. They are also available for republication in Latin American countries only, and for public audition on board all ships at sea. Here is the news. Early this morning, between 6 and 7 o'clock, German troops attacked the Polish frontiers. Reports of the precise points chosen for the attack are not confirmed, but it is known that the frontier had been crossed opposite the corridor, both from the west and from the east, from East Prussia. Attacks have also been launched on Polish Upper Silesia, and according to one report, also from Slovakia. Soon after the land attacks, the German Air Force came into action and bombed 7 important Polish towns. Although few reports have been received from Poland directly, there seems little doubt that the bombed towns include Warsaw and Lodz, which lies between Warsaw and the German frontier, Chiu on the Danzig border, Vilna near the Lithuanian border, and Krakow and Katowice in the industrial area of Silesia. There is as yet no statement of the casualties caused by these raids. The German statement is that their aeroplanes have not been bombing open towns, but only military objectives in or near the towns. The first raid on Warsaw was at 9 o'clock this morning, and a late report says that it was repeated an hour later. And this same report has it that many parts of the city are now in flames, though there is as yet no confirmation for that. The bombing of Polish towns was confirmed by a spokesman of the Polish embassy in London, who said that the towns had been taken completely unawares. Nobody supposed there was war, he said. Without any declaration of war, they have bombed our Polish cities. The reaction to this news in other parts of the world has been immediate. The French government has decreed general mobilization and ordered a state of siege throughout France and in Algeria. The French Chamber of Deputies has been summoned for tomorrow. In London, the King has signed an order in council ordering complete mobilization of the army and the air force. The mobilization of the fleet had already been announced last night. Parliament has been summoned to meet at 6 o'clock this evening, and the Prime Minister will then make a full statement on the situation. The Cabinet sat for nearly 2 hours this morning. In the meantime, the British government has lost no time in making it clear that Great Britain and France will fulfill their obligations to Poland to the utmost. The following statement was made officially this morning. If the proclamation to the German people by Herr Hitler, which has already been announced, should mean, as it would seem to mean, that Germany has declared war on Poland, it can be stated on the highest authority that Great Britain and France are inflexibly determined to fulfill to the uttermost their obligations to the Polish government. It has also been made clear in official circles in London that the account which the Germans broadcast last night about the course of the negotiations is wholly misleading. On Tuesday, Herr Hitler informed Sir Neville Henderson that he expected a Polish plenipotentiary to appear in Berlin by Wednesday at the latest, with full powers to negotiate a settlement. In the meantime, he added that he hoped to elaborate proposals. In other words, the Polish government was expected to submit to the procedure which was imposed on President Hacha of Czechoslovakia, that is, it was expected to send an envoy to Berlin to accept terms which were wholly unknown. Quite naturally, as it felt here, the Polish government were not willing to place themselves in that humiliating position. Even in the case of peace terms which are imposed on a defeated power, it is not customary to demand that negotiators should be refused the right of referring to their government. At such short notice, official circles in London give no further comment on the misleading statements of the German government, except to define the attitude of this country as follows. If the German government had sincerely wanted to settle the dispute by negotiation, they would not have adopted the procedure they have, which has the character of an ultimatum. On the contrary, they would have begun discussions with Poland in accordance with the normal procedure of civilized governments, so as to fix the place and time for the opening of negotiations. As for the German terms published last night, the British government considers that Poland was fully justified in refusing to submit to the treatment which the German government tried to impose on them. The terms should, in the view of the British government, have been submitted to Poland with time to consider whether they infringed Poland's vital interests or not. Germany, it is recalled, informed the British government in writing that she had every intention of respecting Polish vital interests. This explanation of the true course of the negotiations between London and Berlin corrects the long statement broadcast from Berlin last night, which included a detailed plan in 16 points for the immediate return of Danzig to the Reich and a plebiscite in the Polish corridor. From that point, the story is best told by following the successive proclamations broadcast over the German wireless. The Berlin wireless station announced at 5:40 this morning that the Führer had issued a proclamation to the army. It said that Poland had refused the peaceful settlement of relations that Herr Hitler had desired and had appealed to arms. Germans in Poland were persecuted, and a series of violations of the frontier, intolerable to a great power, proved that Poland was no longer willing to respect the frontier of the Reich. In order to put an end to this lunacy, said the Führer's proclamation, I have no other choice than to meet force with force from now on. He added that the German army would fight the battle for the honor and vital rights of reborn Germany with hard determination. The official German wireless station next issued a warning to all ships in the Baltic, stating that the entrance to the port of Gdynia is closed, and every ship entering or leaving risks the danger of being destroyed. Almost immediately afterwards came another announcement from the Berlin wireless that Herr Förster, the Nazi leader in Danzig, had issued a proclamation. It read, Men and women of Danzig, the hour for which we have longed for 20 years has come. Today, Danzig has returned to the greater German Reich. Herr Förster then sent a telegram to Herr Hitler announcing the reunion of Danzig with the Reich from today. He stated that he had put into force the constitutional law effecting the reunion. The terms of this law state, 1. That the constitution of the free city of Danzig is cancelled with immediate effect. 2. That all legislative and executive power is in the hands of the head of the state. 3.
that the land and people now form part of the territory of the German Reich.
Herr Hitler then telegraphed to Herr Forster accepting the proclamation of Danzig's union with Germany. He said that the law for the union was ratified and appointed Herr Forster head of the civil administration of Danzig. At short intervals, the official German wireless is making further important announcements. All civil flying over Germany has been prohibited, and neutral planes are warned that they may be shot down if they fly over the Polish corridor. All schools in the Reich are to be closed from today until further notice. The air arm has also come into action, and the Navy has taken over the protection of the Baltic. Orders of the day were next broadcast to the three German forces. That to the Air Force, issued by Field Marshal Goering, says that Germany's cup is now full, and it adds, "The Führer has called us, our great hour has come." Then came an account of events in Danzig. Herr Forster has called on Dr. Burkhardt, the League of Nations High Commissioner in Danzig, and subsequently Dr. Burkhardt left Danzig together with his staff. The swastika flag was hoisted over the League Commissioner's office. Herr Forster this morning issued an appeal to the Danzig railway men, saying that the swastika flew for the first time over the railways, and adding, "The railways, hitherto under Polish administration, have now become yours." Naturally, the German broadcast announcements did not cover the course of the hostilities against Poland and gave no details either of the operations of the land forces or of the bombing raids. At this morning's meeting of the Reichstag, which was also broadcast, Herr Hitler repeated his arguments that Danzig and the corridor were German and that the German minority had been tortured. Germany, on the other hand, had always kept her obligations to minorities, according to him. He went on, "It is a deliberate lie for anyone to suggest that we always try to bring about revisions under pressure. I have this time, once more, tried to pursue our demands through peaceful channels." Herr Hitler declared that the British government had not wanted to initiate negotiations themselves, but had said they wanted to bring the Poles to the conference table. He had therefore worked out the proposals made known last night, and nothing, he claimed, could have been more loyal and modest than they were. But he had sat waiting for 3 days without a Polish plenipotentiary arriving, and that was intolerable. "I have therefore now decided," he went on, "to speak to the Poles in the same terms as they have used to us for months past." Herr Hitler continued with references to other nations. He had solemnly assured the Western powers that he demanded and would demand nothing from them. He had offered Britain Germany's friendship. The frontier with France, he repeated, was permanent. Next came Italy. "We must, above all, thank Italy, who has supported us the whole time. But they will understand that I will not appeal to foreign help in this fateful hour. We will carry out this our task ourselves." As for the German-Soviet pact, Herr Hitler claimed that this ensured that their forces would be used together and not against each other. Then he outlined his aims. First, to solve the question of Danzig and the corridor, and then to ensure that relations between Poland and Germany would be so changed as to enable them to live together peacefully. "I am therefore determined," he said, "to fight until the Polish government is inclined to set up these relations, or until another government is prepared to do so. I wish to ensure that peace on the eastern frontier does not have a different appearance from that on the western frontier." He stated that he had told his Air Force to confine themselves to military objectives. And he went on to claim that last night, Poles were fighting on German territory, and since 5:45 this morning, Germany had been shooting back. "Every bomb will be answered with bombs," he added. "Whoever fights with poison gas will be fought with poison gas." Herr Hitler then told the Reichstag that if anything happened to him, His successor would be Field Marshal Goering, and after him, Herr Hess. If anything happened to Herr Hess, in turn, then a Senate would appoint a new leader. He concluded by moving a bill for the union of Danzig with the Reich, which was passed with acclamation. Other specified areas are banned. Today, Imperial Airways suspended all services to the continent, and all internal air services run by the railways are cancelled. Another order withdraws all licenses for experimental radio sending and receiving stations. All telephone services to foreign countries and to ships at sea were suspended last night. Inland telegrams are now subject to certain restrictions. A further order makes it an offence for anyone to buy more than a week's supply of any kind of food or to keep more than a week's supply apart from stores bought previously. And this order, it is explained, does not imply a food shortage. It is merely to prevent hoarding and abnormal purchases which might cause a shortage in local shops. The British government has bought 5 million bushels of wheat from the Canadian Wheat Board, part of it being new crop wheat. Our government has also asked Denmark to supply as quickly as possible 24,000 hundredweight of bacon above the fixed quota. It is expected that the bacon will be dispatched this week. The evacuation of 3 million children, mothers, blind and maimed persons from London and other cities of the United Kingdom began before dawn this morning. The first 400,000 children leave London today in the care of 22,000 teachers. More than half of this number are children under 5 years of age, and half of them are being accompanied by their mothers. The bulk of the national transport during the next 4 days is reserved for the evacuation, and skeleton services only remain on duty for normal traffic. Reports from London and all the provincial centres emphasize the smooth efficiency with which the plans are being carried through. They underline the cheerfulness and discipline of the children and of the parents as well. A typical instance of how efficiently the plans are working is provided by Wimbledon. Within 11 minutes of arriving at the station by District Railway this morning, 500 children were in the mainline train on their way to the country. At several London schools, Polish, Czech, and German refugees are among the parties who are leaving. Earl Delaware, President of the Board of Education, said this morning, "There has been little evidence of anxiety on the part of the mothers, and I think a great deal of this is due to their confidence in the teachers." The schemes for removing patients from the big London hospitals are also working smoothly. From St. Thomas's, for example, 122 patients left for the seaside in motor coaches converted into ambulances. Medical students wheeled the patients to the stretcher centres from where they were conveyed to the coaches. Two of the first patients to leave were young mothers whose newly born babies were carried to the coaches by their fathers. While patients were being moved from St. Bartholomew's Hospital in the city, students and nurses who were not assisting in the removal were helping in filling sandbags. In all hospitals, the beds vacated by patients are being reserved for possible casualties. And 2 hours ago, a thin column of smoke appeared over the roof of the German embassy in London, and pieces of charred paper drifted to the ground. It is thought that the embassy staff were burning their secret documents. The Canadian Cabinet has been summoned and should be discussing the situation now. Mr. Mackenzie King, the Prime Minister, was kept informed of the progress of events throughout last night, and the machinery for putting the country on a war basis is already in operation. In Singapore, a communique issued today orders all British ships east of Singapore to call at the port before proceeding west. The government of India has imposed a censorship on outward telegrams and has shut down wireless, telegraph, and telephone services till further notice. Prominent Sikhs all over the Punjab have issued a manifesto assuring the King Emperor of their support. They declare that the Sikhs are determined to uphold their martial traditions by helping Great Britain against the aggressor states. The Burma Senate today passed a resolution approving British policy. The rulers of the Malay states, the Chinese and Indian communities in Malaya, and the communities of Kenya are among those who have sent expressions of loyal support to London. General Vergon has arrived in Cairo from Beirut on his mission to the Near East on behalf of the French government. There are unofficial reports that in the event of war, General Vergon would be the commander-in-chief of the Allied land forces in the Near East. The semi-official Turkish newspaper, Ulus, sums up Turkey's position in the present crisis by saying that in the event of aggression in Eastern Europe or in the Mediterranean, it would be impossible for Turkey's vital interests to remain untouched. It points out that Turkey has reciprocal engagements with England and France, and also a certain responsibility and duties under the Balkan Pact. The Swiss government have ordered general mobilization for tomorrow. The Russian Prime Minister, Mr. Molotov, explaining the Soviet-German pact in the Russian Parliament last night, said it was signed when it became evident that nothing would come of the Anglo-Soviet negotiations. Mr. Molotov accused the British of being insincere, of asking more than they were ready to offer, and of being too slow. He said the Anglo-French definition of indirect aggression provided them with a means of backing out. Mr. Molotov continued, "Even if war is unavoidable, it will be limited in scope. Let those who, under the mask of love for peace, try to set Europe afire, assume that responsibility." The pact with Germany, he said, had no wider implications, and he warned those who read too much into it. The pact, he added, would ensure the growth of Soviet influence on European affairs. Marshal Voroshilov introduced to the Parliament a law extending the period of service in most branches of the Soviet forces and lowering the age of conscript recruits. Signor Mussolini has ordered that from today the army on Italian territory be divided into two groups, one commanded by the Crown Prince of Italy and the other by Marshal Graziani. A Rome decree imposes penalties of up to 3 years' imprisonment and a fine of £100 for food profiteering and hoarding. Italy has given an assurance that she will respect Switzerland's neutrality. In Spain, General Franco has created a supreme general staff under his own supervision, which will coordinate Spain's military and economic forces. The official announcement stresses that the new general staff is meant to be a guarantee of Spain's liberty of action if war breaks out. A late announcement on the German wireless is to the effect that Professor Burkhardt, the League High Commissioner in Danzig, has left there and gone to East Prussia. Among the visitors to No. 10 Downing Street today was Mr. Winston Churchill. He arrived there by car a few minutes ago. The Chinese ambassador in London has protested against the British government's decision to hand over the four Chinese prisoners at Tsintsin to the Japanese authorities. The ambassador says such a thing would be manifestly unjust and would be a breach of this country's treaty obligations towards China. No news has been received from Tsintsin as to whether the men actually have been handed over. We regret to report two serious accidents in Sweden and Belgium last night. In Sweden, it is feared that 32 men were killed and 7 badly injured when 1,000 tons of scaffolding supporting a concrete casting at Central Bay Bridge suddenly collapsed as work was about to cease.
The bridge was over the Angermann River in northeast Sweden.
In Belgium, 7 people are reported to have been killed by an explosion while a local passenger train was crossing the Valbonois Bridge near Liège. The explosion was caused by lightning striking dynamite charges laid under the bridge as part of the defense precautions. Although the bridge collapsed, the train did not fall into the river. The price of gold in London today is 160 shillings an ounce. No business is passing on the foreign exchange market. The sterling dollar rate is nominally 4.19. Business on the commodity markets was almost at a standstill.